All right, welcome everybody to the McShin Foundation's award-winning recovery podcast, Get in the Herd. I am your host today, Darian Diggs. Along with me is Justin, as always. And today, I am super honored to be able to host the podcast with one of the most amazing dudes, a guy I got in my network who also happens to be my uncle, Greg Traber. Greg, the reason I'm interviewing today is because you have this really great event coming up on Saturday the 26th up in Fredericksburg. And I can remember being there 2 years ago for the first time. I was high as a kite while I was there. But, you know, that was kind of the first place that made me realize that I may or may not have had a problem. Whether I was willing to do anything about it at the time, that's debatable. But it was, you know, seeing all those people there and the speakers. I mean, the speakers were amazing. Seeing all those people there, it was different. Almost like they were speaking directly at me. And I don't know. I just got a couple of questions for you. Like, okay. Why is this event so important to you?
Well, of course, it's important to me because of my history of being, for 22 years of using drugs and alcohol and then having 22 years of sobriety, and now I've pretty much dedicated my life career. I'm a certified substance abuse counselor, nationally certified addiction counselor. So I do it to give people an understanding and to instill a little bit of hope that it can be done. The event was actually birthed by my wife, your Aunt Penny. She was listening to a TED Talk one morning about the opiate epidemic in Huntsville, West Virginia, and how the community rallied around the first responders because of the emotional taxing turmoil it was having in their life. The community gathered, rallied around them and really supported them. So she came back and kind of started processing with me and said, what can we do something like, how can we do something like that in our community? So that's when Addiction Inspiring Hope kind of was birthed. And it's just, it's an opportunity to get the community together to realize that they're not alone. Addiction can be a lonely place. And when you don't feel like you have anybody in your corner, it's even lonelier. And it's really hard for people to understand that they can get out of that if they're alone. So we did Addiction Inspiring Hope in 2020. We were going to do it again last year, 2021, but COVID, we were going to have to do it virtual. And my whole thing is one of the quotes that I really hold on to in my life was by another guy who did a TED Talk, Johan Hari. And he said, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. So it's kind of hard to connect virtually. So yeah. we postponed it last year. We canceled it last year and postponed it to this year. So just to give people an opportunity to get together, get loved on, to hear stories of hope. That's kind of why we do it.
Okay. Another question I had is, like, what do you do in your day-to-day life to keep that pain on the forefront of your mind? Like, I don't tell people. I've heard a lot is one of the main things that drives a lot of people is to keep, that right there, that feeling of, remembering when you were sick and tired of being sick and tired. Like, I know I can remember that day. Do you do that? Do you keep that memory up front like that?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I hear it from other people pretty much on a daily. So it's a constant reminder for me that I am, one mistake away from relapse or whatever. And seeing the pain on people's face that are in early recovery or still in active addiction, just kind of reminds me of why I got clean and I'm staying clean. So it's a, you know, it's a blessing to have that on a daily, but it's also very emotionally draining sometimes. Cause I can almost feel, you know, the empathy, where they're at because I was there.
Yeah.
So it's a good reminder for me that I don't want to go back.
Another question I have for you is, like, we're very close. Like I said, like I told everybody, you're my uncle. But what a lot of people don't know is like, I kind of feed off of your recovery. Like, knowing that I got somebody else in the family that has had my problems. And at first I didn't want to talk to you about it, but like now it's, you know, I'm so open to talking to you about everything. Like, I feel so much closer to you, but it's like, I remember the day we had the intervention and how unreceptive I was to it. But like, I don't know. I don't think at that moment I had realized how bad the problem had gotten. And is that something you deal with a lot, is people who don't realize how bad their problem is, the problem of substance use disorder has gotten for them?
Yeah. And you know, it, people who are in addiction have a hard time seeing the pain and destruction it's causing. I mean, they feel it sometimes. But it's, you know, it's the whole step one of AA or NA, you know, is admitting we are powerless over something. And that word powerless, especially, I think more so for males, is a hard word to fathom and grasp, that we are powerless over something.
So it's true.
It's just that recognition that we have lost control and we need to do something radically different to regain control in our life. And it's the removal of the substance is when we can start gaining that control back.
Yeah. The radical difference piece, because recovery is something way different.
You mind if I jump in for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. I just want to say, this is a really powerful situation right now, because in my personal situation, right? Nobody in my family suffers from substance use disorder. And when I was finally able to admit that I had a problem, which took a long time, because again, with that control piece, you know, yeah, I of course I was in control of it. You know, I didn't have a problem.
Sure, you were.
It was fine. Yeah, I was absolutely in control of it. Of course. It took my family sitting me down. I was actually home for the holidays, and it took my family sitting me down and saying, "Son, you look like shit. What is wrong with you? What are you doing? What are you not doing? Are you eating?" You know, this is when I was living in Atlanta. And I was going to town in Atlanta. Not all good stuff. A lot of very bad stuff. And of course I denied it and I denied it. And, you know, of course I'm fine. But then when the truth finally came out, it was, you know, well, I don't understand, you know, why don't you just not do drugs? Why don't you just not do the things that you're doing? And, you know, for someone that suffers with substance use disorder, it's not that easy. It's just not, that's just not how it works. And not being able to have anybody in your immediate family, or even, you know, in your extended family that you can get to understand that, that is so frustrating. That is so frustrating. You know, I'm the first person in my family to have this disease.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like you said, Greg, it's lonely. It's so lonely, because you feel like you have no one. And knowing that, Darian, that you have, you know, Greg to, like you said, you know, you feed off of his recovery, man, that is an amazing resource. That's something that I would venture to say 50 to 60% of addicts, you know, don't necessarily have. But that's, you know, here at McShin, we do peer to peer, you know, and you've got someone on the outside that you can relate to that is essentially a peer to peer situation.
Yeah.
That's so awesome, man. Yeah, that's, I just wanted to jump in and say that because that's really, really cool.
Well, that's a big thing too, is I had him this whole time and never knew how much I needed him. Right.
Yeah.
You know, cause if I'm honest, you know, whether it was weed, alcohol, heroin, cocaine, crack, anything like that, I've always had a problem since I was much younger.
Oh yeah.
But I never knew who to talk to. And so I've had this like example of recovery this whole time, but never knew I needed him or knew how to use the example. And it wasn't until I did some separate CSAC counseling for a little while. And it wasn't until I was talking to that CSAC counselor about my uncle, who was like, so you've had this resource this whole time and you like, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't even think of it like that. But now it's like, you know, getting like when I come home and I get to talk to Greg about like small accomplishments and blessings that have been happening in my life because I'm in recovery, it has completely changed. Like, I feel like how I see myself and how I feel other people see me. Like, I'm not worried about that sort of stuff, like what the family thinks of me anymore. I know they're proud of me because I made this step and this choice.
Isn't that a crazy feeling? Knowing that your family's proud of you. And
yeah.
That,
Like when I got, me and him were texting earlier and he was like, you're doing the interview, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, this is so cool. This is awesome. I love you, dude. Like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like makes me what? Like,
yeah.
That's so cool. Another question I have for you, Uncle Greg. So what about them Redskins?
Commanders, dude. Commanders.
Commanders. I'm sorry. But no.
You're going to make me want to relapse, dude. That's not talking about
No, but what is – what was that turning point for you?
You know, dude, it's as I said, you know, we were talking yesterday. You know, that whole, you said it earlier, the sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, my January 20th, 2000, my family kind of did an intervention on me, and my dad, my stepmom, my mother-in-law, my wife were all present, and I was ready. I was working for my dad. I got in the car. He said, we have to go look at a job site. So I get in the car and he said, you know, you're not getting, he said, what's going on with you? You're not getting out of the car until you tell me. And I said, I'm addicted to drugs and I'm an alcoholic. And they thought I was having an affair, which I was. It just wasn't with a woman. It was with drugs. Same type of behavior, sneaking out, spending money, not being where I'm supposed to be. You know, the same type of behaviors that go into hiding an affair. I was hiding my drug abuse. And it was just when he looked at me and goes, okay, now what do we do? And I won't drop an F-bomb, but I did then. I'm like, I don't know. You tell me. I'm the one that just kind of, I'm lost. I'm done. So that afternoon, I signed up for rehab, and that was on a Monday. That Wednesday, I went to rehab, but I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't have money. I couldn't have car keys. I mean, I was kind of on lockdown for a while, but it was just, I was just ready. You know, I was 34 years old, had two kids. I was just tired, man. I was just tired. And it's, you know, why then? I don't know. I was just ready. Yeah. And I didn't know how ready I was until I said, I'm ready.
You know, it's crazy. Like, that's my story that he's talking. Like, I can remember my last day and, you know, helping my friend move and being like, please don't take me back to the house that I was at. I need to go to my great grandmother's house. Like, and telling her, I don't know what I need to do, but I need help. Like, you know, Mimi, telling Mimi, I don't know what I need to do, but I need help. Like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing because I'm going to die and I don't want to die. And, you know, luckily, luckily I get that, you know, I have the privilege of being able to have you in my life and knowing that when I'm facing this challenge, that I'm not doing it alone. I've got the support from the family, but I've got support from somebody just like me.
Just not as handsome.
You threw me off there for a second.
Greg, I think you hit the nail on the head, man, when you said, you know, you were, you know, a couple of times sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you were just ready. I know that I've seen a lot of participants come through, you know, different RCOs, and they don't seem like they're necessarily ready. They seem like they're there because they're kind of forced to be here, or they're out of options, but they're not necessarily ready to really get on a path of recovery and you know, find a different way to live, you know, a better, newer way to live. And man, if you're not ready, it doesn't necessarily stick, you know? And I see that, like I said, I see that all too often, and it sucks because now I see it a lot here too. People will come in and they'll jump into the lifestyle and they'll, you know, step work every day and call my sponsor every day. And that's great. But deep down, they're still having these reservations and they're still, you know, it's hard to explain, but
no, I get it.
Yeah. It's the first time. So this is my second time through McShin. The first time I came through, I'll be honest, I was looking for a place to live, and RCO, they don't do credit checks at RCOs. So I got in and I was paying my bed fees, got a job real quick. You know, I was fine. And I was like, shit, all I gotta do is stay sober while I'm here. I can do that. No problem. I don't need to work, you know, recovery, like that's whatever, you know? So I didn't work any type of program, nothing like that. You know, wasn't really working on myself at all. I was just basically staying clean. And like I said, when I moved out, within 2 weeks of me moving out, I was using again,
right?
You know, and not just weekend warrior. Like I went hard, you know, and I stayed out for years. It got to the point where I hit my bottom. And I drug my girlfriend through a whole heap of shit, and I love her to death, man. And she put up with some shit. She really did. And bless her heart, man. Like that woman is a warrior for real. Like to be able to deal with my ass for as long as she did, doing the things that I did. Good God. And to know that she still loves me. Like that's crazy. That's amazing. You know, like I'm so lucky. But besides that, like I hit my bottom, I had nothing, and I was completely hopeless. And I remember coming in this time being like, okay, that enough is enough. I'm done with this. I'm done with the chase. I'm done with, you know, this is not fun anymore. There's nothing enjoyable about this anymore. This is a living hell, you know? And something clicked, you know? And I was like, I'm absolutely ready, yeah. You know? And I haven't looked back since. I love it on this side of the train tracks, you know?
Absolutely.
This is far and away such a better way to live. Yeah. You know, I can be present in my loved ones' lives. You know, I'm not spending my entire paycheck the minute I get it. You know, I'm not waking up feeling like absolute garbage every morning. You know, like I can maintain responsibilities. I mean, hell, I have a license. I have a truck with legal tags on it. Yeah. You know, like I didn't have any of that stuff before, you know, and I'm 41 years old. You know, and it's like, it's only been a year and I'm like, man, I've gotten all this stuff back already. I can't wait to see what the next, you know, decades look
Absolutely.
Like, you know, I can't wait to see what the rest of my life looks like. Cause if I can get all this back in a year, holy shit.
Sky's the limit, man.
Dude, the sky. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There is no limit.
I tell people all the time, early recovery is the hardest thing you'll ever do.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also the it will also be one of the most rewarding things you have to do, and you have to be selfish.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if you're doing it for any other reason other than you want to do it, it's never going to work. If you're doing it for courts or for spouse or parents, it typically does not work that way. You've got to make the decision that you are doing this for you and for no other reason and be selfish with it. And yep. And then again, like Darian just said, sky's the limit. It's amazing to me to watch people work hard in the beginning stages and really grind and do what they need to do to maintain sobriety, to get into a program, to surround themselves with people who care and love and you know, totally radically change, you know, previous, and I say friendships loosely, you know, surround yourself with people who are going to love and support you and that you can reach out to. And when you're feeling low and when emotions are going crazy, because in early recovery, emotions are all over the place because we don't know mm-hmm. what emotions are because we've been using drugs for so long. Those, when you make it through those, when you can kind of make it through that urge and crave to want to use, then it just builds character and it builds a want to experience something different. And Justin, you're experiencing that. Darian, you've begun to experience it, and I'm excited to see where it goes for you. It's easy to go out and use. It's easy.
So easy. So easy.
So right now you guys are doing the hard work it takes to really live life the way life should be lived.
There was at the last Inspiring Hope, you played this song with Nikki Sixx's band, and I'm trying to think of, there was a certain section. Yeah, there's a certain section in that song. I can't think of it right now, but
Let me. Did you say Nikki Sixx's band?
Yeah,
it's called Sixx, Sixx AM.
Is Nikki Sixx in the band?
He's the bass player. Yeah,
he's in recovery.
Yeah. I knew that.
Actually, I'm playing that song again this time at the end. It's called Talk to Me. But I'm playing another 6 a.m. song at the beginning of this one. It's called Maybe It's Time. It's a collaboration with several artists that are in recovery. Corey Taylor, the lead singer from Five Finger Death Punch. Old Def Leppard, Elliot, the lead singer, Gilbert Brantley, country singer. They're all in recovery, and they did this song, Maybe It's Time. It's freaking awesome. But
So you're not just a recovery rock star. You're a real life rock star. That's badass, dude. I did not know that. What, Darian?
Oh, dude, me and my Uncle Greg used to watch wrestling together. Like you
didn't tell me any of this.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, I had to save some pizzazz for the show.
Fair enough. <Yeah. laughs> Sorry if I let the cat out of the bag, but damn, dude, that is awesome.
Yeah,
that is so cool.
We used to at his house on Buxley Court. Used to watch wrestling, and then me and my cousin Kyle would take all of the couch cushions and everything off, and would jump on each other, and he would just sit there and watch us jump on each other. We used to have so much fun. I mean, we still do have fun. I mean, we've got funny nicknames for each other. But it's cool because I get to do that now and actually be present for it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm able to enjoy it, like, and not wonder if there's an ulterior motive behind it and not be like, oh, he's just saying that.
Right.
Because, I don't even know the reason, but for some reason it just doesn't feel genuine. And now I can like look at him and be like, man, I love you, dude.
Right.
But you know, it's cool, Darren, is when I stopped by Friday to see you, just when you introduced me to people and just their comments about you, you know, we can look in a mirror and see things in ourselves, but when other people see it in us and express it to other people, that's what makes it real. And you know, two or three people, you know, were talking about how awesome you were and what a great kid you were and how smart you, all those things, which I've known all along, but I could see it in you that you're beginning to believe that. And I want you to hold on to that, dude. I mean, 5 months is amazing, but you're still a baby, you know, and I don't want you to ever think that you don't have what it takes, because you so do.
Thank you.
And don't ever doubt yourself, because I know that's something that creeps in sometimes too.
Yeah. Self-doubt is my biggest enemy. Like, and I think for a lot of addicts, self-doubt is something that, or doubt in general, it doesn't have to be self-doubt, just, you know, second guessing. The fear of the unknown.
We're all guilty of it, though.
Yeah. Yep.
All good.
Like, I think that's one of my biggest enemies, like my biggest battle. If we were talking about like Hercules and the nine tasks, my ninth task would be conquering self-doubt. Like, you know, it's one of those things where I have to be present in myself and be confident in myself, and having self-confidence sometimes is hard. But it's like I'm able to have self-confidence now. Like, I can remember for a long time, and I'm sure you can remember too, I hated myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I always thought there was a problem with me and couldn't, like, just wasn't happy, didn't know how to be happy, and would second-guess every decision I'd make and would lie to make myself feel better and to try and make people think better of me. And now I can sit here and be like, I have no reason to lie. Like, recovery, I've lied my entire life, and the first time I've ever been honest was in recovery. And now it's like, I don't ever want to go back to being like that again.
Isn't it freeing, dude?
It is so freeing. Like, and besides that, you know, that saying, it's harder to be negative than it is to be positive. And it's like, it is so hard to keep yourself in a lie and remember who I told what and when I told them that, and
exhausting.
Yeah. So I would rather just be like, all right, my name is Darian Diggs. I have a heroin problem, but I'm recovering. I feel great.
You found freedom.
I found freedom. And like, for everybody out there, anybody out there who is having the same problem that I have, you know, find a guy. I'll link you up with my Uncle Greg. That's a resource that I feel everybody should have. I mean, leaps and bounds has helped me out with it, even in things that aren't recovery. When it comes to, you know, just needing somebody to talk to, he's, you know, he's understanding, and being able to have that, like, you know, somebody that I'm comfortable with, and that I can say anything to, and know that I'm like, you know, I'll get honest feedback. Like, he's not going to lie to me, because I have a lot of people who co-sign my bullshit.
Right.
Right. Knowing that he won't co-sign my bullshit, it doesn't matter what I say to him. He's going to let me know whether I'm doing right or whether I'm doing wrong, or, you know, will give me the suggestion that he thinks I need to hear, or just the suggestion in general. Having somebody like that in my life, like, that's leaps and bounds ahead of what I had earlier in life.
So guys, at this point in the show, I want to take about a 2 to 3 minute commercial break real quick.
Sounds good.
We're going to play ourselves a little commercial, and then we'll be right back. All right.
Sounds good, bro.
And we're back.
For some reason, right as we were coming back, I had the Law and Order intro in my head, the dun dun, and I was getting ready to do that, but I was like, let me not. Also, your hair looks crazy awesome right now.
Crazy awesome?
Yeah, you look like you have like one of those Norse dreadlocks, the big Norse dreadlocks coming down, and I'm like, so
I may or may not be growing one of those.
I mean, it would look perfect on you, dude.
Wouldn't it?
Yes, you need that.
Greg, I wish you could see me. But
you know. Me too. Now I got a vision in my head.
Justin is like, what, you're 6'3"?
No, I'm like 6 foot.
You're taller than me. I'm 6 foot.
I'm not taller than you, am I?
Yeah, you're taller than me. I don't know. But like the head is a lot, but like, I don't know, an inch and a half, 2 inches.
All right. I haven't taken my height recently, so maybe I should do that.
Yeah, but he's like this big dude, jacked dude with Thor's hammer tattooed on the side of his head.
Nice.
Yeah, he looks the part of Viking. Like, if I was going to cast somebody in a movie for Viking, it'd be just head Viking, just so you know. because that's,
I'm going to take all that as a compliment.
It is a compliment because, yeah, we talk about this all the time. I always tell you that, like, sometimes I'm scared because I don't know if you can pull Thor's hammer off the side of your head.
He says he's scared of me, but I'm a really nice guy.
You are, and I love you.
I love you too.
So, Inspiring Hope, the 26th. I can't wait to be there.
I can't wait to see you there, man.
And, you know, we're bringing up the intensive guys.
Nice.
For it. And I think, like, it's going to be so cool to be able to, like, represent McShin at an event that my uncle is doing and to be able to introduce these people to all the, because you guys have a resource, you have resource tables.
Yeah, and I was going to say, if you want to bring some resources, I actually had one of our resources, she got COVID and she's not going to be able to be there. So if McShin wants to bring, if you want to bring some resources and set them out on the table, I'm perfectly cool with that.
Okay, well, I will definitely talk to Jesse and let him know. Maybe get Nathan on board with this because that's Nathan's thing.
Yeah, that's Nathan's field.
Yeah, so, but no, so. Goodness, I lost my train of thought again.
It happens.
Well, you were talking about resources real quick. I'll just touch on, we'll have a couple of facilities. Father Martin Ashley is going to have a representative there. The local community service board, Snowden at Fredericksburg, the local psychiatric hospital. So a representative from Celebrate Recovery. So there'd be six or seven different resources there for people to kind of, if need be, get tapped into. Last time we did in 2020, when we did this, we got six people into some form of recovery, whether it been residential or just outpatient or like an IOP. So six people made the decision on that day to start on the journey that we're all on, which is pretty cool.
That is awesome. I don't think I ever heard that before. That's super cool.
Wow. That's what we do, man.
That gives me goosebumps. Like, that's so cool. I'm so, like, I'm so happy for the first time in a long time. And being able to talk to you about stuff when I need to is a great factor in that. And I don't know. Getting a little text from you and knowing, like, I got somebody from the family that's, like, deep in my, deep in my corner. It means a lot. And I just wanted to know, like, what is something that makes, like, that helps you start your day? Like,
you know, dude, I am grateful for so much. I read this quote, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and I'm not real good. I'm pretty simple. I'm not real good at memorization or remembering things or, you know, but I saw this quote. It said, a seed of depression cannot take root in a grateful heart. And over the years, I've added a seed of bitterness, a seed of resentment, you know, any kind of negative seed cannot take root if you're grateful. And if we really focus on, you know, on a daily, you know, I'm grateful for, and we have so much to be grateful for, it kind of sets the stage, sets the tone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, that's what I try to do. I don't always get it right. You know, I'm thick-headed sometimes and stubborn and make stupid decisions and say stupid things, but I really try to be grateful for what I have. And, you know, again, like your family's my family, my family's your family. So, you know, the support and encouragement and stuff that, you know, that my wife, your aunt has given me over the years, you know, Mimi, you know, they're all in our corner, man. And that's a pretty cool thing to have, is that unconditional love and support, you know, kind of keeps you going, man.
It really does. Meme texts me and calls me every day. You know, my mom, we don't argue anymore. She texts me and calls me every day. Like,
that's not a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. Like, yeah. The feeling that I don't have to worry about wanting to talk to my mom, like wondering, okay, is she going to call today? Is it going to be a good day when she calls, or are we going to fight? Like, recovery has given me the opportunity to be able to be like, you know what? I'm just not going to do it. Like,
you know, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, you're all good.
I tell you, the moment for me that kind of changed my, I don't know how I can word this. Like, I know my parents have always been proud of me, you know, but they haven't always necessarily trusted me. Mm. And for good reason, you know, I've stolen, I've lied, I've cheated, all that stuff, you know, like most of us have.
Yeah.
So every Christmas, we all convene at my parents' house. You know, we do the presents and all that good stuff. Well, last year when I went there, I was going through horrible withdrawals. I felt like shit. I was just waiting, you know, for a little bit of money to somehow come in a card or something like that so I could get what I needed. Nobody gave me money.
Yeah.
It was my parents gave me a gift card to Kroger.
Yeah.
That's not returnable. And they were like, go get some groceries. And I was like, well, I need gas money, you know. And they were like, oh, you can use that at the Kroger gas station too. And son of a bitch, you know, like, this year, when I went over there, they gave me cash.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Most people are like, okay, cool. What's the big deal? I'm like, that's a huge deal to me. My parents gave me cash.
Yeah.
And I didn't spend it on drugs.
Yeah. That's
did not spend it on drugs or alcohol.
People,
you know, like I forget exactly. I mean, you know, I probably bought something stupid with it because I'm not good with money, but I know what I didn't spend it on.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like, and the fact that they gave me actual cold hard cash, like, that meant the world to me. Like that was huge for me because I was just like, damn, you guys trust and know that I'm not going to go buy some dumb shit with it that, you know, is going to end up hurting me in the long run. You know, like that was just a huge moment for me.
Yeah. Oh, what were you saying, Uncle Craig? Sorry.
I just said absolutely.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of how I feel. Like, I don't worry about carrying cash anymore. When I first got here, one of my biggest triggers was cash.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I use a dollar bill for everything.
Yeah.
So, like, having cash now, like, being able to carry cash in my wallet and be like, I got this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm cooling. That's a big thing for me.
See, I used to have to carry cash everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? Because you have to,
you know?
But now, like, all my money is, you know, credit cards and bank cards. So I very rarely carry cash, very rarely. I actually don't even like having cash right now, you know, cause I've, like I said, I'm terrible with money. If I have cash, I'm just going to be like, oh, this is just, you know, I don't factor that into my budget. You know, it's like, oh, I've got cash. I can spend it on, you know, vape stuff or whatever, you know. But yeah, like it's crazy how after just a little bit of recovery, like we start noticing little differences like that, you know.
Yeah.
Just little things like. Just the things that we couldn't do before, like, you know, the ability to, like you said, be present for people.
Yeah.
The ability to, be present for ourselves. Yeah. You know, we start taking care of ourselves. When I got here this last time, I weighed 170 pounds.
Ooh, that's small for you, dude.
Yeah. I weigh 220 pounds now.
Yeah, I'm just getting ready to say.
Yeah. And that was another proud moment when I passed the 200 mark. I'd never weighed 200 pounds before. I've always been like a twig.
You know?
if you ask my girlfriend, she'll say, no, you haven't always been a twig, but I think I have been, you know?
And now you're jacked.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I heard you talking about 405 on the back squat earlier. And I was like, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Well, look at the weight you've put on, Darian, in the past couple months.
Yeah. 53 pounds. I've gained about 11 and a half pounds every
But you look healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel a lot healthier. I feel better than what I did, even at, like, my resting weight normally is, like, 160. I'm 184 right now, and I feel 10 times healthier than what I normally do.
When you get to 265, come talk to me.
That's my goal. I'm trying to John Cena Diesel, you know what I'm saying?
John Cena Diesel.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, have you ever seen the video of Paul Walker dressed up like Vin Diesel in the, like, muscle suit? And he's going, it's Diesel time! Diesel! You got to look at, you got to watch that video. It's so hilarious. That's, like, I envision myself like that sometimes. Just all jacked up going, it's Diesel time!
Hey, man, hard work and dedication. You can get there.
Yeah, that's the goal.
You know, I was going to say, for people who are just starting on this journey, emotions can be very fickle and very confusing. But just know that emotions are fleeting. They never stay constant.
Yeah.
They ebb and flow like waves. Sometimes they, you know, are out in the ocean sounding all pretty and you can get soothed by the ocean, sound of the ocean waves. Sometimes they crash at your feet. Sometimes they may hit you in the knees and startle you. And sometimes they crash over you and knock you on your ass. But they always go back out to sea. They never stay constant. So,
yeah.
Ride those emotions out. In my view, there's no such thing as a negative emotion. It's just an emotion. And it will go away. And most of the time, people use drugs or alcohol to feel better, different, or nothing at all. And emotions make us want to change. Uncomfortable emotions make us want to change. So we know we can go to help change that. But just ride it out, knowing that it's not going to be there in the next 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes or the next day. So just be mindful of that.
Yeah, we got this guy here that says, Grateful Rob. Shout out
Grateful Rob.
He said he always tells us, feelings aren't facts, y'all.
Nope.
And don't make it a fact.
Don't get confused.
Yeah, he goes, feelings aren't facts and don't make them facts. And I love that.
That is a huge, that's a huge piece that a lot of people new in recovery don't take into consideration is that emotions piece, man. And that's the hit right there, man. Like, you know, we stop using and we start feeling again.
Yep.
And we start having those emotions. And I mean, emotions are my trigger, man. Emotions are my trigger 100%. You know, I'm an emotional guy, you know, like when I get angry, I get really angry.
Yeah.
When I get sad, I get really sad. You know, like it's not just like a little bit here and there. It's just my emotions engulf me. And that was one of the hardest things. One of the hardest, I guess, pieces that I had to figure out how to conquer is being able to sit with my emotions and just deal with them and just hang out with them, you know. Because there isn't an emotion that exists in an addict's mind that you don't want to get high over,
right?
You know,
I'm happy, let's use, I'm sad, exactly.
Hit the nail on the head, man. And that's, you know, that's I've seen because I work in this industry, because you know, I've surrounded myself with people that are in recovery, that are relapse. That's the number one thing that I see people, you know, knocking people off of their recovery pathway is something will happen and they'll be upset about it. And it's almost like it gives them an excuse, you know, it gives them an excuse to use. And that's one of the things I always say is I'm a permissions guy, meaning that if I give myself permission to take a sip of a beer, you know, you know, to eat a THC gummy, something stupid like that. I've just given myself permission to do whatever the hell I want.
To do anything.
Anything. Yeah.
It's a slow fade, man. Slippery.
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens so fast. It happens so fast before you know it, you're back into full on active addiction. And we all know that the moment you get back into active addiction, man, you lose everything that you've worked for almost overnight, you know, you lose all of it.
I always tell myself that I don't have a relapse left in me. I'm 56 years old. If I go back out, there's a real good chance I'll never come back.
And yeah. That
scares me enough to motivate me never even to even consider or think about picking up again.
Yeah. And it's crazy, especially nowadays, man, five plus years ago, you know, dope was dope.
Fentanyl
you know?
Wasn't a thing, man.
Fentanyl, exactly. Fentanyl wasn't a thing. And now there's something else out that's even more powerful than fentanyl. And I mean, I've got people dropping dead left and right, you know,
people 100,000 people last year, man.
Yeah. I mean, people that just want to go out and get one real quick, you know, and, you know, they think they're getting one thing and they get another and then bam, just like that, another life is extinguished.
Yeah,
you know?
Man, the extra research isn't worth it.
No, it is not. You know what?
It's we, the three of us don't ever have to worry about it. If we never go back out,
exactly.
Never have to worry about that happening to us because we're choosing a different path. And that's the cool part about it. You know, addiction is a disease, but the carrier of the disease also carries the cure, and that's abstinence. You don't use, you don't have to worry about it.
You know,
man, I like that.
When I, the first time I came through here, people kept throwing around a quote, and I could not grasp what it meant until this second time around. And that quote is, you don't ever have to use again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like I said, I couldn't grasp what the hell that meant. Like, I don't have to, but what if I want to, you know, like, but to in the addict mind, you know, you get to a point where you do have to use.
Yeah.
You have to. There's no other choice.
Right.
And that, I love that quote now because it's like, no, I don't. I don't have to use ever again. I just don't have to, you know?
It's a pretty cool feeling.
That's an amazing feeling, knowing that I can just wake up and go to a place and do a thing and not have to worry about getting high first. Like, holy shit. That's so awesome.
Just being
for years, I mean, you know, I had to basically be wasted before I could go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise I wasn't getting out of bed, you know? But yeah, man, this recovery thing is Greg, like you said, it's extremely freeing.
Yep.
Extremely freeing. It's incredible.
I tell people, if I'd have known it would have been this good, I'd have got clean a whole lot sooner.
Yeah.
But I had to go through what I went through to get to where I'm at. So I'm not upset at all about how I went through because it got me to where I'm at now. So, and I'm blessed and, you know, and it's cool to look and see, you know, Darian do his thing and just him finding himself and coming to life again is pretty awesome to witness. So,
Darian's a cool dude. I like him.
Yeah,
I tolerate him.
He all right.
Y'all got me blushing.
Well, look, we're at the 52-minute mark now. We're gonna go ahead and land the plane. Did you have any more questions or anything? Or,
no, I just want to say thank you for coming on and thank you for loving on me.
Hey, man, thanks for the invite, and I enjoy loving on you, dude.
Yeah, I love you so much, Uncle Greg.
Well, you know what, dude? You keep doing what you're doing. You keep doing the next right thing, and you're going to go places, man.
Thank you.
All right. Again, as I told you earlier, I'm super proud of you.
Thank you.
Greg, it has been it's been an honor talking to you, man. Well, you've shared a lot of, you know, that experience, strength, and hope piece that we talk about. And to know that you're a freaking rock star, that's icing on the cake, man. Like, what the hell?
Best guess. I mean,
playing with Nikki Sixx, like, geez, come on. But yeah, man, it's been really cool talking to you. You know, hope we're able to keep in touch.
Absolutely.
That would be really cool. The bigger I can build shit, the bigger both of us can build our networks, the better, man.
Absolutely.
You know? I'll give you his number right after we get
absolutely.
On.
It's all about, you know, staying with the right people and surrounding yourself with people that are going to support you in your recovery and people that, you know, you can support as well.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so, good show, guys. Really good show. We talked about a lot of good stuff here. Yeah. So again, Greg, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on. Darian, is there anything else you wanted to say? Any kind of lasting thoughts or anything?
Final remark. I'd just like to say Bruce Lee has this quote that he talks about being like water. And I think that applies to life so well. He says, if you put water in a cup, it becomes the cup. If you put water in a bowl, it becomes the bowl. And I have to think of myself like water. You know, I've got to be able to adapt to I'm doing. Right. And I think the same thing goes for life and recovery is, you know, you get these feelings back. You get all these, you know, everything back. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to adapt to the situation, whether it's good or bad. So being like water, I just want to tell everybody to remember to be like water. And that's all I got.
Awesome. Greg, any kind of last remarks, closing remarks, anything?
Nope. Just I appreciate you guys. I appreciate what McShin does. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing where Darian goes. And I'm happy to be a part of it. I appreciate you guys inviting me.
All right, Greg, thank you very much. Like I said, it's been an honor and a pleasure talking to you.
All right, you guys be good.
All right.
I love you, brother.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Get in the Herd, a podcast about addiction and recovery brought to you by the McShin Foundation. If you or a loved one are looking for real discussions about addiction, recovery, stigma, advocacy, and most importantly, hope, then stick around. Thanks for joining us. Now sit back and get ready for another great episode of Get in the Herd.
Liller. I am the CEO of the McShin Foundation and a woman in long-term recovery. Since May 27, 2007, I have not used drugs or alcohol. Woo-hoo! Thank you so much to the Richmond Times-Dispatch and all of our voters for Get in the Herd podcast. Those podcasts are amazing. Not only has it helped thousands upon thousands of people in their recovery, as well as family members, but it has helped me in my personal recovery. I get to listen to them now in my car through Spotify and iHeartRadio. And it's just really, really important for us to be innovative in the addiction field and the recovery community. So when COVID hit, we had to be innovative. You know, we really had to think of like, what can we do to reach people that cannot go to 12-step meetings, smart recovery, faith-based, whatever, that we're shutting down constantly. So we were innovative here at McShin. Let's start podcast. So with Todd, John, Alex, and some other staff, you know, we all just kind of jumped in who can do what. And with Todd's lead and John's lead, the podcasts have been amazing and we're still doing them today. So I want to thank you for all of your votes and all of your energy and all of your support of our mission of healing families and saving lives. Thanks.